Welcome back in. Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Member FDIC, equal housing lender. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Monday morning in Nashville, Tennessee. Talking Titans, reacting to a big Titans win yesterday, 25-16 over the Colts. They moved to 2-1, and the Colts fall to 0-3 on the season. So a big one yesterday for the Titans. But Joe, maybe a costly one yesterday for the Titans as well. Christian Fulton leaving the game. Bud Dupree not able to go in the game. A.J. Brown with a hamstring injury. And Rashad Weaver breaking his right fibula. I mean, there were a lot of losses yesterday for the Titans in that game. And then a very strange situation as well. I was watching the game on the TV broadcast, and you were there in Nissan Stadium. And all of a sudden, the Titans have the ball in the fourth quarter. And Julio Jones is not on the field, and they flash over to the sideline. And as they flash over to the sideline, Julio Jones is running down the sideline, just kind of jogging, grabs his helmet, slips it on, and runs back to the sideline and looks like he's just ready to go in. And then we never saw Julio Jones in the game in the fourth quarter. What happened on that? And, you know, Mike Vrabel talked about it after the game. We'll get that sound coming up here in just a few seconds, but it was very strange to watch him be fully in uniform, go get the helmet, put the helmet on, look like he was about to go in the game, and then Julio Jones was just parked on the sideline in the fourth quarter.
Yeah, it was very strange. I went back and watched, you know, that, like, you know, the game, but I was like, okay, what was Julio's, like, last play? Did he, like, you know, totally decide not to block or not to run his route or something? Like, what, you know, what went on here? The last play of the third quarter was a Derrick Henry run, I think about 11 yards around, over, you know, on the left side.
Yep.
Julio Jones is on the field. I wrote this in my column, and now I need to get the name again. But Julio Jones is on the field, and he actually did a really nice job getting the backside defensive end. Al-Qadeen Muhammad, I mean, he just sort of ran interference, got in his way, an effective block. He couldn't reach Henry. I mean, it wasn't like the key block on the play, but it was good work by a receiver on a running play. And that was the last play of the third quarter. And then they came out and continued the drive. And, of course, that drive ended with the McNichols touchdown.
Yep.
But he was never again on the field. So here, let me go back to this. Because, I mean, seriously, it really is amazing when you think about third and goal from the 10. You're up 14-13. Huge moment. Huge moment. You need everything you can get in this offense. You have an obvious passing down. You got to have your weapons. Derrick Henry's off the field. We know this happens. Although Derrick Henry, again, by the way, caught the ball yesterday on it.
Three targets, three catches.
His hands, you know. But Jeremy McNichols, tight end, you got Michael Pruitt. At receiver, you have Chester Rogers, Nick Westbrook-Ikhina, and Racy McMath. That's your receiving trio. And the biggest play of the game, arguably the biggest play of the season to that point. And, of course, Tannehill, quick look off. He said after the game that he actually was, like, his first read was left, the receivers, but the Colts dropped way out of there, probably overdropped. And he got it right on time to McNichols, and it looked like an easy touchdown. But, again, that's quarterback play, quick decisions, and overcoming the fact that, like, this is nothing like what we thought would be around him this year. It's supposed to be A.J. Brown, Julio Jones, and Anthony Firkser, and maybe Darrington Evans on a 3rd and 10, you know, and it's all these guys. So, Vrabel, we can play Vrabel, and I understand, like, a lot of the fourth quarter you're going to be running the ball, you have a lead, but there were still several plays in the fourth quarter where you had to throw the ball. And where Julio Jones, I would think, might be nice to have on the football field and wasn't on the football field, I find very peculiar.
Well, and obviously, Mike Vrabel was asked about that after the game and had an interesting response. Here's what Mike Vrabel had to say about Julio Jones after the game yesterday.
Did Julio suffer something new today? Or was that it?
You know, again, we've been through these with players and their health. Trying to manage a season and the way that the game was going, and we felt like that was best to do.
So that was Vrabel yesterday. We've been through these with players and their health, trying to manage a season and the way the game was going, and that's what the Titans did yesterday. So Look, there's not much clarity in that answer, obviously, and I do wonder, was something bothering Julio Jones? And Mike Vrabel obviously is not going to talk about that after a game. But if it's just as simple as, hey, we're just trying to manage Julio Jones through the season, and he's not out there in the fourth quarter, this is really, really interesting stuff and an interesting response by Mike Vrabel yesterday.
So that was the second time he was asked about Julio. So here's the first answer. And again, there's not any much more clarity, but just a little bit more. Quote, I think as this thing played out, tried to manage where he's at, understand that what the type of game that we thought the end of the game was going to be, and those guys were going in there trying to dig safeties out. We'll keep looking at those guys. A lot of guys are going to need some rest this week. A lot of guys that played a hard physical game. Hopefully we can be ready to go when we head up to New York. So, yeah, I mean, look, is it an injury that they didn't want to talk about? I mean, again, the sideline reporter for CBS went and, of course, checked on that and said no. I mean, they said it's not an injury. And when anybody gets anything in an NFL game, that word comes quickly up to the press box. Whoever it is, A.J. Brown, hamstring, questionable. And eventually, A.J. Brown, hamstring, out. Whatever the case may be. There was nothing like that with this. So, if it's not anything injury-related, I mean, I guess I understand, Vrabel's talking about, the type of game. So, it's going to be a heavy run game. So you're going to have a lot of physical moments and blocking and all that. But again, why isn't he going out there on third and long? I mean, they had a huge third down, which again, the quarterback did not have big stats in this game. Man, the quarterback was, to me, number one reason you won this game, and yet you've won three or four against the Colts. Makes a real nice play to Michael Pruitt. Michael Pruitt made a real nice catch on that ball too, by the way. It was a little bit high.
Yeah.
But they went deep on another play to Westbrook-Ikhina. Drew a PI, drew a big play. But again, that play, seems like Julio Jones there. Who knows what happened? But, I mean, there were enough obvious passing situations. The second 11 where Tannehill takes off. It wasn't like they just, here's 4 yards, here's 3 yards, and then here's Derrick Henry for 4 yards, and here's another first down, and Derrick Henry for five, Derrick Henry for four. Derrick Henry gets – I mean, they had – passing situations that they had to get through, and they got through with who they had. But I mean, there's something that's not being told here to
yes.
about this story.
Well, there is, and it just if it's not an injury or something to that nature, it makes no sense. Julio Jones was awesome against Seattle. I thought Julio Jones was fine yesterday against Indianapolis.
Well, he's 3 for 47 in the first half.
Yeah, he's by far your best weapon at receiver with A.J. Brown on the sideline. So, look, there's a lot of people that are going to make it, well, Vrabel must hate Julio Jones today. And I don't think that that's it, but it would be nice, to say something about what happened there with Julio Jones to avoid that kind of stuff, because to me, there's nothing else that makes sense with Julio Jones being out of the game if it's not injury. That makes no sense to me. And Vrabel, surely he knows that.
Yes. Yeah, no question. And so, look, that Vrabel obviously values blocking at the receiver position.
He does.
Maybe a little more than you do. But
nothing wrong with good blocking.
I feel like you're starting to come around and love the blocking aspect of the receiver position.
Alan Lazard had a great block last night on Nick Bosa.
See, there you go. See?
It's good stuff.
It's very important. It's 11 on 11. I haven't gone through every single Julio play. I mean, I guess, that sounds really tedious. Was there?
You going to do that today?
I hope not. Maybe. I don't know. But, were there some plays where, he just dogged it, decided not to block? Again, the last play, he was on the field. He did exactly what he was supposed to do on the play. From what I could tell, looked like it was exactly what he was supposed to do. He gets in the way. The defensive end, that's also, it's a big guy. Got in the way. Derrick Henry got a big run. So was there a conversation between the third and the fourth, that pissed off Vrabel? I have no idea. But it's bizarre to not have him in there at least in those obvious passing situations. If there was a point that you wanted to prove, I guess the point was proved. You won the game. The other guys went in there, did the job. Hey, Westbrook-Ikhina. I mean, every time he makes a play, you tweeted at me. Everybody tweet. It's Westbrook, but I mean, honestly, he was
great touchdown.
He was pretty good. You know, he had, and also there was another passing down where Tannehill, talk about a tight window.
Yeah.
On the sideline in the fourth quarter, but it was also a very good catch by Westbrook Akina. So he's been a nice story. And Chester Rogers and some of these guys. I mean, Cam Batts is out there. Great. But, I mean, Julio Jones is one of the best receivers in the NFL. So if you're trying to hold on to a game, you get an obvious passing situation, you don't want that guy on the field?
Makes no
sense. It totally
sense.
Changes like how the defense looks at the play from the pre-snap.
That's why I have a hard time going there where some Titans fans are going of, wow, there must be some serious beef between Vrabel and Julio Jones. I mean, look, I don't know what the conversations privately are like between Vrabel and Julio Jones, but just from a pure football standpoint, if there's no injury involved or something going on, it makes no sense for the Titans.
And the problem with this whole thing is that, you know, it's funny because like Frank Reich's presser yesterday, like this is what he does every presser. Okay, we got Quentin Nelson, that's an ankle. We got, I mean, sure, that's how he starts every presser. This guy hamstring, this guy's a knee, a shoulder, yeah, a couple weeks probably, but we'll see. Okay, and anyway, the game, that's good. Yeah. Vrabel, I mean, if this is an injury or something they're worried about, he's never going to say anything.
Yeah.
He won't specify. He will never, ever do it, which is fine, except now in a situation like this, let the speculation reign, because if that is what it is and you're not clarifying, well,
this is what happens.
Here you go.
Go to thegamenashville.com/deals to check out Nashville's best deals. Current deals include half off of gift cards for Retro Snow, Fat Cat Slims, Central Barbecue, Joyland in East Nashville, and Bad Axe Throwing in Nashville. Get your deals now while they last at thegamenashville.com/deals. We'll continue the conversation on Julio Jones and the Titans. Take your thoughts on our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Hope everybody's doing well. Joe Rex Road, how are you? Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Volunteer State Bank. Real people, real solutions right here. Remember FDIC, Equal Housing Lender.
That was my bad.
You're like throwing your voice around the studio.
It's an impressive talent I developed over the weekend.
Nice.
Been working on some stuff.
Was that for like earlier in the show?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes,
yeah.
It was.
I thought I was
playing a Vrabel clip.
So
turns out it was a Robbie clip.
Playing a Robbie clip.
Who wouldn't want to hear that?
Good.
That's
also
right.
Also good.
Let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com, 615-737-1025. Joey from Gallatin texting in, pretty frustrated that Vrabel feels the need to totally refuse to give details on players. This is coming from Joey in Gallatin.
Yeah, well, we've talked about this. I mean, it's not going to change, so you got to get used to the ground rules. And I've said this on the show before too, but like I asked him his first year, like why won't you do this? And essentially, one of the things he says, I don't like to set expectations because on health, you know, because sometimes it's like, oh yeah, you know, a couple weeks, and then a player, it's 4 weeks because you just don't know with injuries. Sometimes they're more or less severe than you think, or they take longer or less time, whatever. So a lot of things he does, including like when he got here, we didn't get like locker room anymore during the spring, stuff like that. A lot of things he does are around being a player recently and trying to make it like what he thinks. So again, that's also why he doesn't too often get into like individual evaluations of play and stuff, right? So it's a player's coach approach, but I think at times I would argue that there are different kinds of injury answers that would help you to give them, and it doesn't necessarily hurt the player. So, but it's not going to change. So when situations like this happen, and it is a weird situation,
yeah,
I mean, I'm sorry, but like something is not computing here. But whenever a situation like this happens and there's not going to be specifics given on the injury, it opens the door for more speculation.
Matt texting in, I think Julio thinks he's bigger than the team. Vrabel has that Belichick mindset and doesn't care how big the star is. Like, look, I hear that. And, you know, we've talked about Julio Jones a lot in terms of the way things ended in Atlanta. I just, without being in the building and being a part of every conversation that Mike Vrabel and Julio Jones have, look, maybe there is some beef there. I don't know. But I find it hard to believe that Vrabel is sitting down Julio Jones in the fourth quarter because of beef that they might have. Like, to me, it's as simple to me as something's not adding up here from an injury standpoint, and Vrabel's not talking about it.
Well, it is one of the two.
Yeah.
I mean, I would tend to lean toward it's probably more on the physical side, but I don't know. I think that anytime something like this happens, the Julio stuff is going to come up.
Yep.
And that's fine. I mean, obviously, it didn't go well late in Atlanta, and he had issues with people, but it also, it's just hard to take that to hear from me because clearly the contract was part of that, right? I mean, everything we've seen from Julio Jones has been fine.
Yeah.
He seems to, you know, again, he seems to be a good teammate and all that stuff. Is there something with him and Vrabel? I don't know. If there is, boy, it's a long season ahead, man.
Yeah.
There's a lot.
There's a lot of football left.
And the bottom line is, like, if he's able to go and there's no injury reported, then I think it's just crazy not to use him in passing downs.
Yeah, makes no sense. I got a texture that says he probably knows that AJ is going to miss some time and trying to keep Julio as fresh as possible. Well, I get
trying to win a game.
I was about to say, I get trying to keep a player fresh, but you don't need to sit out an entire quarter to stay fresh. Get a breather on the sideline for a couple plays, get back in there.
Well, and again, like Vrabel's answer on the type of game, digging out safeties, all that, I mean, I get that. Nick Westbrook-Ikhine isn't exactly like the most physical specimen in the world, but he does that job. You know, he's earned his way on this team with special teams and doing that, and now he's catching the ball some. But it's not that kind of game on third and 10. On third and 10, it's you are going to drop back and hope someone gets open and move the chains. Again, they got through fine, but I don't think you're like, okay, we're in this heated division game. It's the fourth quarter. We're up a single score, and we desperately need to, you know, keep the ball slash get points. But you know what? AJ's out. I got to think long term on this. Yeah, have a seat, man. I know it's important right now and all, but nah, go ahead. Let's think about November. No, you're trying to win a game right now. They did.
And that's not what Vrabel's doing. Like, he's not thinking that.
No. But what is it?
I don't know.
You tell me.
It's a great question. It really is. Look, that's going to be a talking point today. I know when Vrabel has his press conference today, he's going to be asked about Julio Jones. So, I mean, that's the other part of if it is as simple as an injury, if you address it yesterday, then you're not having this big, long conversation about it today. That's the other part of it. It's sometimes, and I get it, it's not going to change with Vrabel. It just is what it is. But sometimes you just prolong this sort of talking point or distraction because you just won't answer a question about it. And that's what – look, there's going to be a lot of conversation about Julio Jones today. And you're going to, if you're Vrabel, have to sit up there and answer more questions about it. If it is as simple as, yeah, he was a little nicked up and we didn't want to put him out there and risk anything, why not just say that yesterday? You don't have to go into specifics of what it is, but why not just say that?
Right. And again, the answer was kind of hinting toward that, but didn't actually say he was nicked up. So if not, then I don't understand. Then there's information we're missing.
Right. Andrew from Dover texting in, my favorite part of the whole game was Henry bulldozing Leonard and his stiff arm after the catch as well. Were a couple highlight plays again yesterday from Derrick Henry. Nice stiff arm after a catch that he lined him up out wide to the left. That was some good stuff. And then the bulldozing of Darius Leonard was something to behold. I tweeted that he knocked Darius Leonard into Clarksville yesterday.
Yeah, it wasn't with what Derrick Henry has done to various defenders, that one may not make the highlight tape, but it was still pretty good.
It was.
Because Darius Leonard's a great player, and he got trucked on that play. That's the thing. We've barely talked about Derrick Henry today.
118 yards.
113. 28,
excuse me, 113 yards.
28 for 113. I mean, tough sledding.
Yeah.
The Colts are good. Colts are a good defensive team. And actually, really the second quarter, end of the second quarter, the Colts looked gassed defensively. They were absolutely running and getting lanes, and he was just coming downhill. And then I believe that was a Chester Rogers pick,
yep,
which was unfortunate. Rogers said, you know, I guess there was a zone man mix-up with him and Tannehill, but also he said, to quote him, I just got to catch the damn ball because it was right in his hands. So that pop up, that ball pops up, they pick it off. But otherwise, Derrick Henry was already wearing them out in the second quarter, and he never broke one, but very good day on the ground, very punishing day on the ground. And again, you think about that, the Rodgers and then the Westbrook-Ikhina fumble. This game could have been a total just blowout.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, you have two giveaways where you're taking points off the board, possibly 6 points, but at least 3 points, we think, because Randy Bullock so far has
been pretty automatic.
That's the type of stuff that usually loses you a game. That's how, to me, controlling of this game the Titans were overall.
You can watch us streaming live today on Twitch, Twitter, and YouTube today and every day. Our video streaming brought to you by the law offices of Amanda Gentry. Coming up next, we'll get into Tennessee and Florida over the weekend. Also, visit Georgia's absolute dismantling of the Vanderbilt Commodores as well. All that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Yeah, Josh, can you just talk about, I know the second half didn't go your way, but you had some things going there until that Callaway drop. Can you just talk about that fourth, because you had converted a fourth and five, and then obviously that play.
Yeah, I had a couple, the second half, it just the flow of it, you know, the clock was draining on everybody's drive in the second half. There weren't a ton of opportunities. You had to maximize every one of those drives, and you know, a couple of situations that we're in fourth down that, you know, we got Callaway on a simple drag route that's got a chance to, you know, pick up a first down and maybe go the distance. We're in a fourth and short and a unique situation, having moved centers and end up in a delay of game there and feel like you have to punt the football. So just some unique things that unfolded that you can't do as a – if you want to win against a really good football team like this, you just can't do it as a program. So we got to get better.
That was Tennessee head coach Josh Heupel after a 38-14 loss for the Vols on Saturday against Florida. And, Joe, it was an interesting game. The final score ended up being right around where I thought it would in terms of a 24-point margin of victory for Florida. But I think you watch that game, Tennessee had some chances in that game to really hang in there and make it a game. I mean, they're up 14-10 at one point on a 75-yard bomb from Hendon Hooker to Peyton. And, you know, it was kind of a shock to the system to see Tennessee hit on a deep ball that actually connected, and they scored a touchdown on that play. It's the first time we've seen that this
year. How about that?
Yeah, that was something. But I thought early in the game, Vols were playing well offensively. Heupel had some tempo going that seemed to keep Florida a little bit off balance. But maybe more impressively, defensively, the Vols were getting some big stops early in that game. And then as the game wore on and Florida got more and more opportunities, the running game just ended up being too much. But, you know, the 38-14 score ends up about exactly where I thought it would. But I thought Tennessee showed some signs in that game where they looked pretty good and probably should have made that game a lot closer than it ended up being.
Yeah, I mean, I guess it's kind of sad to say, you know, they lost by 24, but really, like, it should have been a lot closer than that. But I do believe that. I mean, I think, I think Jimmy Callaway is going to be a really good player.
Got to catch the ball, dude.
You can't convince me that if he doesn't just catch that little drag route where he's all alone, and I think he scores, but if he doesn't score, someone is taking an angle on him and taking him down at like the 5-yard line.
Yep.
And you are trending toward making that game 24-21 early in the third, and he just flat out drops it. And the game completely went sideways on Tennessee from there.
Yep.
So, good things. I mean, again, I think it's the same good stuff. I love some of the plays they come up with to attack specific defenses. I like the play calling. I like the offense. And honestly, I don't hate the defense even. Like, I feel like the defense has limitations but is playing its butt off.
Yep.
And, you know, rallying, tackling, but there's still a lot of just mistakes all around the field. So this is one of those things you can look at it and say, gosh, that's too many mistakes. The overall product here, you have to look at Josh Heupel and say, that's got it cleaned up. And I agree, but also when you play way more talented teams, then the mistakes tend to come a lot more frequently. And you got to keep that in mind too. Florida is really good.
They are.
I kind of chickened out before the season because I thought, gosh, could they threaten Georgia? I don't know, they're threatening Georgia, which could have scored 150 on Vanderbilt Saturday. But they are, I think, a legit top 10 football team.
No, they're very good. And, look, Emory Jones, I still don't know that Emory Jones pushing the ball down the field is what you want if you're Florida. But he was good on Saturday. 21 of 27, 209, two touchdowns. He took care of the ball. Obviously, he put on 144 on the ground in the game, too. So, I mean, that's what makes Emory Jones so dangerous is the dual threat element that he brings to the table. But they're a really good team. And, you know, Dan Mullen, I think we know this by now, he's not the most pleasant person, not the most pleasant in terms of how he deals with the media sometimes, but he's a pretty good football coach. And that Dan Mullen, look, he's going to get this Florida team at least to a spot where they're competitive with Georgia. I don't know if they're going to beat Georgia, but I'm looking forward to that game coming up.
Yep, he's really good. Yeah, he can rub you the wrong way, but you'd love him if he was your coach. Yeah. And frankly, he almost was Tennessee's
coach.
Yes,
he was.
And that was the ideal scenario at that time, and it didn't work out that way. And if they would have gone after Chip Kelly, then I think he'd be here.
Yep.
Instead, he's here to torment Tennessee.
I will say, I thought Tennessee did a much better job on the ground in that game than I thought they would have. I mean, they put up 148 yards. Only 23 of it came from Hendon Hooker, and he had some big runs along the way. But Tyon Evans, 11 carries, 50 yards. He had the big catch as well, which that guy's a weapon. I mean,
yes.
He is something that I think if you're a Tennessee fan, you can be excited about moving forward. I thought Jabari Small ran the ball well as well.
It's a nice combo.
Yeah, that was impressive to me. I didn't think that they would be able to get much push and run the ball that way. I was impressed that they were able to do that. But, again, it was clear as that game went on, from a depth perspective, Tennessee's just not there, and Florida is.
Well, and also Cooper Mays, they were better, and then he's struggling and fighting to be out there, and he's limping around.
He
and
can
then
barely
he,
walk
and then
at the
he
end
has
of the game.
To, yeah, and it's tough because, of course, you're Cooper Mays, you want to play in the Florida game, and he made a difference, I feel like. And now what does that mean? You know, how much does that set him back moving forward? I mean, I don't blame him at all for Tennessee for him playing. But it's just unfortunate because he's a key player. And like you said, the depth is not there. But I still watch this Tennessee offense. I expect them to go put a number on Missouri Saturday. Yep. I really do. And now is let's find out. I mean, it's year. Let's find out within the confines of year one. Can Josh Heupel keep this team together? Can they clean up some stuff they need to clean up and keep doing these good things that I think should give them some wins against some of the, you know, middling teams in the SEC?
Well, and Alante Taylor is saying after the game that, you know, basically Tennessee, we're not going to fall apart this year, was his quote after the game. He said you could quote him on that. Now's the test. I mean, you've got, quite frankly, a game I think you should win in Missouri coming up this weekend. You've got South Carolina coming up as well. You should win that game. I mean, there are games coming up that Tennessee should win. And now it's on them to respond and do that. Of course, now is Hendon Hooker going to be available? He leaves the game with an injury. Joe Milton comes in. Joe Milton is 2 for 8 for 54 yards. Is Hendon Hooker going to be available to play as they move forward here? Because based on what we've seen, if he is, I think Hendon Hooker's the guy as you go.
Yeah, I think he is too. You know, I think with Milton – obviously, we know the overthrows are a thing. And I think especially now you come in and it's like, okay, here's a limited opportunity. It's almost like there's even more juice on the throws.
Yeah.
But it's hard to argue. You know, I think Hendon Hooker overall has been better. I still would buy into the idea that a Joe Milton could end up being a better player than Hendon Hooker.
Yep.
But you got to – It comes down to what you're doing out there on the field. So that's going to be really interesting moving forward for sure.
Got to start getting more out of Jalin Hyatt. I mean, he has been a non-factor this season, and that is very surprising to me so far. Now, injuries have been a part of that story for sure. And, I mean, look, he's healthy enough to be out there, so it's hard for me to use that as an excuse right now. Zero catches for Jalin Hyatt.
Yeah, I've got to think that, obviously, you know, the big play that never was, but almost was against Pittsburgh, knocks him out of the game. That's a factor here. I would think he would get back into it. There's competition though too for those snaps at receiver. They've got a lot of guys who can make big plays. You got to start, I think, kind of also figuring out your group there, because I think as you figure out a more consistent group rather than constantly rotating guys, you know, you have a better chance to make plays in key moments. But, of course, when you're playing that tempo offense, it's great also to be able to just keep throwing in waves of guys and hope that the same cornerbacks start losing a step against them. But I agree. Jalin Hyatt's got to be a big part of this offense.
And then on the other side of town here locally, we knew it was going to be bad, and we knew it was going to be ugly for Vanderbilt on Saturday. I don't know if I anticipated 62-0. That was pretty dominant from start to finish, and I tweeted this out in the first quarter, and I believe this. You know, people joke about this stuff all the time. I fully believe had Georgia wanted to put up 100 points in that game Saturday, they could have scored 100 points.
Sure.
Like, I have no problem going there.
Well, they took their starting quarterback out in the first quarter. Yes. Right, at the end of the first quarter.
They covered in the first quarter.
They did.
Yeah, right. Now, Vanderbilt helps. I mean, it's already bad, and they're coming out. They're going to dominate you. They are a dominant team. You are a very depleted first-year program Vanderbilt team. But then you take the ball out of the end zone, freshman, and you fumble. You give them two freebies in the first quarter to go with everything else, and it's immediately 28-0. I was there in the press box, and Teresa Walker to my right, Aria Gerson to my left. Stephen Godfrey was in there counting up the, you know, that's basically what we were doing in the press box, was looking at the scoreboard at the total yards, like, will Vanderbilt have more yards than Georgia has points? And they did. They won 77-62 in that way. It was ugly. I don't know how much you can take out of that game other than let's just see if you keep playing. And I think they will. I mean, I was watching the sideline a fair amount and just watching how they're playing. I mean, I thought they played hard throughout the game. They were just totally overmatched. Mike Wright got a lot of time, and I think some of that is, you know, obviously getting him work. But also, Ken Seals was already taking some shots. And it's like, you know what? Maybe get Ken Seals out of there a little bit. And now, I mean, look, we've got four more days after this to break this down. I mean, we should maybe use an entire show or two. The primetime battle of the ages, UConn at Vanderbilt.
Yes.
Saturday night. I'm just sad that I can't be there. You know, going to New York for the Titans. But
I might go.
New Jersey.
You might go?
I might go. We'll see.
Going to Jersey.
I'm staying in New York. So I'm going to New York. LaGuardia, and I'm staying in New York.
Biggest pet peeve this week. Everyone, we're going to New York. No, you are going to New Jersey.
But I'm not. And then I'll drive over to Jersey, watch
East
the game, and
Rutherford,
come back to New York.
Baby. Yeah. East Rutherford.
Is it East Rutherford now? I thought it's actually.
I think it's East Rutherford.
That's where the Meadowlands was forever, but now they're in that other place. But it's still Jersey.
Can you tell I really keep track of them up there?
The 0-3 Jets and the 0-3 Giants both play in that wonderful stadium.
Great football up there.
If we could get Jets Giants, it'd be somewhat like Vandy UConn and the NFL level.
They threw for 24 yards on Saturday. 24 yards.
Vanderbilt?
Passing. Yes.
Yeah.
16 yards for Mike Wright, 8 yards for Ken Seals, passing the ball.
And you know,
I've never seen that in my life.
And again, like, Vanderbilt has legit receivers.
Actually,
Chris Pierce made a play on the sideline. He was just
like
out of bounds.
Odell Beckham catch.
It was amazing. but I mean, Georgia was just like, you know what? We're going to play man-to-man on everyone and sure, see what you can do. And also, we're going to be on your quarterback in about 0.8 of a second every time you drop back. And it was – I don't know how good Georgia is because, you know, the thing is, I thought Georgia was amazing based on the win over Clemson. And now we're looking at Clemson, and it's like, man, their offense is terrible. So I don't know how good Georgia is, but I think they're pretty freaking good.
Yeah.
And we might be headed toward Georgia, Alabama, in the SEC title game, and we know they're both
turn around and playing each other again in the first round of the playoffs.
Yes. Maybe.
We'll see what happens. Still a long way to go.
Yeah. But Vandy UConn, Saturday night.
Yes, looking forward to that.
And Vanderbilt is what's the line on that?
I haven't looked.
I think they're like a 2-touchdown favorite against UConn.
Well, they probably should be. UConn is kind of a special kind of bad this year. So we'll see what happens on that front. Do you want to win a pair of tickets to see the Preds take on the Sharks at Bridgestone Arena on Tuesday, October 26th? Well, if you do, head on over to YouTube and subscribe to the 102.5 The Game YouTube page, and you'll enter for your chance to see the Preds take on the Sharks. One winner will be chosen on Monday, October the 4th. When we come back, it is time for the Rex Rant, Joe Rexroad's Rant of the Week. Coming up next, this is Robbie and Rexroad here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And it is that time of the week, time for the Rex Rant here on Robbie and Rexroad. I got to tell you, that song was in my head literally all weekend.
Beat you like a drum.
I can't stop singing it. Just around my house.
I was sitting around a fire on Saturday, and I was just sitting here humming the Tennessee Oilers song and out loud. My dad was like, "What are you doing, man?"
That's awesome. You played that, Michelle, because you think I don't like the song?
No, I didn't think you didn't like it.
I'm in a good mood now because you played that song.
No, I know. Well, Ryan said you should make a open to that, and I was like, yeah, that'd be fun. And hey, maybe we want you to be in a good mood fired up for the Rex rant, Joe. Yeah.
That's true. I don't want to be too
mean. Not always against you, Joe.
I don't want to be too mean to Ryan Porth here.
Well, with that in mind, what is today's version of the Rex Rant, which, by the way, you can hear every Monday here on Robbie and Rex Road at 7:45.
So I think I've had this rant before. I mean, how much recycling are we going to do?
You start it that way every week. I think I've done this before. But very rarely have you done it before.
Well, it's like, but it's also like, you know, you get to a certain age and you do the same thing forever.
Sure.
Like, I made like a Lucy and Charlie Brown reference in my column today. And it's like, that's like the 93rd time that I've gone there in football, going back to like, you know, Michigan State. I mean, it's like, dude. Like,
it was a good reference.
Come up with something new. Well, thanks. But anyway, so here's, let's go to the text line. Let's go to the, Porth text yesterday. So it was 206. Okay, so we're talking, and by the way, I mean, Porth, he could like fire me on the spot for, you know, calling him out here.
Could be.
But it's worth it.
Could be the last Rex rant.
Yeah, this could be the last Rex rant. So Ryan Porth quote, Titans-Colts games can be launched into the universe. I bleeping hate watching these games. The Colts can rot in hell. My text back was, the Titans are winning. Here's the text back from him. They are 100% going to lose this game. We've seen this movie before. Okay. So, and again, I've heard this. I mean, last year, and you know what? Give them credit, because last year, going into that game here, I think you and I were both like, yeah, they're better. They'll beat the Colts.
He called it.
And he called it. And, you know, when you got a punter who does what the Titans temporary punter at the time did, a lot of things went wrong in that game. Titans blew it.
Shout out Trevor Daniel.
Yeah. But here's the thing that Titans fans, and my larger rant is more than Porth, because I think Porth spoke for a lot of people yesterday. I think this exact thought process represented a lot of Titans fans. I'd love to know how many, but I bet you it was pretty significant. I mean, I saw it on social media. Other people I know are Titans fans, just the sense of doom with the Colts. So I'm going to go, and this is a bit of what I wrote about today, really, was also about this. So this is a rant that's also basically the inspiration for my column of the game, because Titans fans, first of all, two things. One, please have perspective. Again, I've tried to present to you the perspective that you need to have as an NFL fan. Just go look at the Detroit Lions. And Matt, like, think about the difference in scene. You have their owner who can't even speak a word to honor Calvin Johnson because the entire stadium is booing so loud she can't even get a word out.
Just a chorus of boos. Yeah.
You know, here you got Amy Adams Strunk and people are actually cheering and you're honoring the Oilers. You win a big game. You have a competent owner and a good team and a solid franchise. And sure, you'd like to win a Super Bowl at some point and get back there and all that, but it could be way worse than this. That's one. Two, the reason that you feel like you're cursed against the Colts is because Peyton Manning and Andrew Luck were the Colts quarterbacks. I mean, I went through every single game. I went through every single box score, okay? So it is now 28-12. Colts over the Titans since the Titans became the Titans.
Yep.
28-12 after the Titans win yesterday. 24 of those games involved either Manning or Luck, okay? Yet, you know why it feels like, God, we always blow it at the end against these guys? Because Manning or Luck was quarterbacking the other team. And listen, Steve McNair, actually, the last quarterback the Titans had where you really thought you had like a top quarterback in the NFL, well, he beat Peyton Manning three times straight up. It was 5-3 between those two. They shared an MVP in 03.
Yeah.
That's the last time you had a quarterback who could actually give you a puncher's chance on a regular basis against the Indianapolis Colts. I mean, Mariota, not great, but when he got to go against Jacoby Brissett, what did he do? He swept him in 2017. There's nothing here there's no mental, you know, edge the Colts have. There's no curse. They've had better quarterbacks. That's all it is. So it's 28-12 now, and Ryan Tannehill is 3-1 against the Colts. He lost the game we just talked about,
yep,
and a lot of things went wrong. He's 3-1, which means that he now has 25% of the wins ever against the Colts. Okay?
Yes.
He and McNair have half over a period of more than 20 years. They have half of the wins against the Colts. Why is this? Because it's about quarterback play. So stop crying and whining and expecting your team to lose and understand that you now have the better quarterback and you're probably going to beat them way more than you lose to them while you have the better quarterback.
It's got a text from Jared. It says, you know better than this BS from Joe. Talking to me.
Oh, really? Well, I'd love to hear it, Jared. What's the BS?
Well, everybody's going to bring up Orlovsky and Curtis Painter and all these different quarterbacks that the Colts have trotted out there. They're beating Titans. But to your point, and I can cheat on this because I've read your column, who were the quarterbacks that the Titans had in those games?
Yeah, first of all, and this is a fact error because I went through it, Curtis Painter did not ever beat the Titans. So I don't know who thought that, but it's not true. I mean, I seriously went through the box scores. Now, he had to play that year. What year was that Manning got hurt? I have it here. I mean, I have it here. So in 2011, Hasselbeck beat Painter. And then actually it was the same season the Orlovsky thing happened. So, you know, Orlovsky beat Hasselbeck and Jake Locker. Okay. The other crazy win where it's like, oh my gosh, Josh Freeman and Ryan Lindley. Well, guess what? The Titans quarterbacks were Alex Tanney and Zach Mettenberger. Congratulations. I mean, again, you can go through here. And you can, granted, Jim Sorge also had a hand in a win over – actually, the Titans had Vince Young, Kerry Collins, and Chris Sims in an 08 game. But the numbers are about the quarterback. You're going to have a random result here and there, right? But they've just been better at the most important position. I mean, that's it. They had one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time, and then – they happened to bottom out and get one of – it could have been one of the greatest quarterbacks of all time after that. I mean, that guy went 11-0 against the Titans, you know?
He did.
And usually those plays are like, oh, they do it again, is because he was the quarterback. So I'd love to know, Jared, what is the BS? What is the BS? Tell me where I'm BSing right now. Oh.
Jared's like the father texting in, Robbie, don't listen to your crazy uncle right now. It's fine. Everything's okay.
Jared's afraid to text me right now.
I'm sure he'll text you. You
know my number. Meanwhile, Porth just texts me in all caps. The Titans are cursed against the Colts, Joe. For the rest of time, they will have our number. Yeah. But, I seriously think there are people who have thought this, and I don't know how long Tannehill's going to be the quarterback or how long he's going to play at this level. You should be confident every time you play them. While the quarterback situation is as it is. And the numbers are already bearing that out. 75%, Ryan Tannehill.
Dennis texting in, it's BS that teams with great quarterbacks will probably win when everyone knows games are decided by curses. This coming from Dennis on the text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com.
Yes, Dennis, yes. That our fantasy league, Dennis?
Yes. Ben texting in, the game is won and lost in the trenches. And the fact that Indy's offensive line couldn't protect Wentz, especially after losing Nelson, was the story of the game yesterday.
I don't know if it was the story of the game, but it was a big part of the game.
Yeah.
The fact that he couldn't move. So
that was probably more of the story than anything.
Yeah, that's good luck for the Titans. But they did a good job of pressuring him. Shoot, they got Landry had 5 quarterback hits. You know, he only got a half sack, but he was playing well. The Titans had 10 quarterback hits in the game. The Colts had 2.
Yeah.
And one of them was another, here you go, take a free shot at our quarterback, see if you can knock him out of the game, Bobby Okereke.
Do the quarterback hits count when Tannehill's running 35 yards down the field, lowering his shoulder into a safety?
No.
Does that count as quarterback?
He becomes a runner.
Okay.
But that's a good point, though.
When we come back, we'll be joined by Corey Curtis from News 2. We'll get his thoughts on the Titans' big win yesterday against the Colts. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.